I'm going to start this sermon out. Okay, come here. Come here. Okay.
What have I signed myself up for?
Okay, I need you to, you see, I've got some tools I need for my worship, and I need you to hold them.
Okay.
Okay? First of all, I've got my Bible here, so that can stay there, but I always want to make sure I've got different translations. You know, here's this one, 8 translation paraphrase here. Hold that. Okay, and let's see. The Message, I turn to that a lot. I want to have that right nearby, and the Contemporary English Version, I really like that. And I thought for this one, the Cotton Patch Version is really good. You know, you always start out with Bible stuff. But, you know, you got to also get back to... we know that the Bible wasn't written in English. It was written in Greek. So I have my interlinear Greek New Testament here. So would you hold that too? And let's see. Here, just to create the pile. And here's an analytical Greek lexicon that, you know, I can look up some of the words. And that helps me, actually, when I'm examining some of the words. Here's this big lexicon, which is like a dictionary.
I have one of those.
You've got one of those? Okay. Well, here's another one. Okay. And this is an index to that so that I can easily find the words. And... this is, I really like this one. This is the Theological Dictionary of the New Testament. It has all these words. I regularly use that, and I want to have that one available. Now, also, we've got this one in the library, but this is the New Interpreter's Dictionary of the Bible.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
You sure?
Yeah, let's go.
You sure?
Okay.
Oh, yeah, really, yeah. Well, you know, I've got 3 different commentaries that I really lean on a lot. I mean, I've got many different commentaries on the Bible that I turn to. This one was actually written by a brethren, one of my teachers in seminary. This one from the Anchor Bible I really like, and this is an old classic by C. Carey Barrett. I like those. And, you know, sometimes I like being able to have a story, you know, an illustration. And this one by Chuck Swindoll has lots of them in there that I turn to. And this has some, I haven't used this one as much, but this has got a lot of poems in it that are kind of tied to Bible verses. You doing okay?
Yeah, I'm great.
Okay. You sure? And I thought, you know, I sometimes like to turn to... you know, different writers like Karl Barth, a famous Do you need some help?
Nope.
You sure?
I'm good.
Okay.
Yep. It's like college all over again.
Like college all over again. Okay. Church dogmatics. Now, this is one I sometimes, well, rarely turn to. Okay. And Paul Tillich was a famous theologian, and I almost never turn to him, but you know, he's good to have nearby. And then, of course, Martin Luther King Jr., yeah. You know, you need that. So, you know, I thought that I'd have these tools available to me. So, you doing okay?
Yeah, I'm great.
You sure?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Well, why don't we put them over here? Let's.
If I could see, that would be great.
Okay. Well, why don't we put them over here? Okay. Yeah. Here, let's. Here, now back up a little bit. Let me. Okay. And, okay. Okay.
So how many of these have you actually read?
All of them, of course. Okay. Well, thank you. I've now have got my, I'm all ready, and that's really all I needed you for, Dan.
All right, so, very good.
Thank you very much. Have you figured out my little homiletical device here? You notice all my tools, and I can actually remember one of the first times I ever led a Bible study. It was at a church out in Indiana. I was an associate pastor, and the pastor there was sick, and he normally led the Bible study. And this was before I went to seminary, but I had a bunch of books, and so I brought them all with me, and I sort of laid them out in front of me to lead the thing, and it was sort of like a little fort. You notice something about all the tools? As worthwhile as they all are, what are they doing? Yeah. Kind of hard to see the cross, isn't it? Yeah. Of course, it was moved a little bit over to the right. We'd be blocking the light, or to the left. Now, the Apostle Paul, when he was writing to those folks in Corinth, you got to know that Paul was not an anti-intellectual. Paul was a very well-trained Pharisee. Pharisee sort of being a precursor of both in the Jewish tradition, rabbis, and in the Christian tradition, pastors or preachers. He was trained. So when he begins his little talk, if you will, to the folks in Corinth, he is not saying, all that stuff is worthless, you know, don't pay any attention to it. He's actually using a bit of sarcasm, if you will. Because there's something else you've got to know about the Apostle Paul. He may have been gifted as a writer, but when it came to public speaking, he was probably not the early Christian world's shining star. You know, people didn't say of Paul, wow, I could listen to that guy for hours. He's so mesmerizing. Later on in one of his letters to the Corinthians, he in fact talks about a thorn in the flesh, and we don't know exactly what thorn in the flesh it is that he's been struggling with, but some have a wonder whether it doesn't have something to do with his ability to speak out loud to other people. Maybe he had a high, whiny voice. Maybe he struggled, as some do, with being able to talk. We don't know. But we do know that when he was saying, I came not preaching all sorts of wisdom, you know, earthly wisdom and stuff like this, he wasn't saying, tear down all that stuff. It's not worth it. He wasn't saying that. He was calling for wisdom, but kind of a different kind of wisdom. I think it would be helpful. Maybe I'll just use one of my resources here to get at this. When he talks about, I decided, or I made up my mind that when I came to you, I would preach nothing but Christ crucified and him crucified. You remember that line? You heard it. Preach nothing but Christ and him crucified. I'm not sure we totally grasp what a shock that might have been to the people of that age, for him to be writing that. Now listen to this. This is Clarence Jordan's Cotton Patch version of the gospel, in which he tries to take the gospel and, like any rabbi or preacher should do, try to plant it in the soil of where he was living, when this was South Georgia. And so he was using images, and as he came up with his paraphrase of 1 Corinthians and some other works of the New Testament, things that would make sense down there. Make sense, but maybe not be any more acceptable down there. And he starts out this. Now, brothers, while I was with you, I did not go around preaching God's word with a lot of fancy sermons or learned discourses. For I had decided to concentrate all my attention on Jesus Christ, in parentheses, and a lynched man at that. A lynched man. To be looking as a leader, as a savior, as a messiah to someone who was, well, in his words, lynched, may not make a lot of sense. I mean, okay, what is power in this world? You know, think about what's happening currently in Egypt. We mentioned this earlier. Is power, an example of power, the gaining of it? And like in the president there, Hosni Mubarak, who's been able to hold on to it for how many years? Is real power found in the gaining of power and in the maintaining of power? Or is real power found in the ability to relinquish it? And I just wonder what, looking at what possibly could happen in Egypt, will Hosni Mubarak be remembered more as the dictator who held on to the very end until he was forced to relinquish the power that he had? Or will he be remembered as someone who was able to step back from it and let it flow into other hands? That, my friends, is really, when we talk about the cross, what it's all about. For in examining the cross, we see God in Jesus Christ relinquishing power, letting it go, releasing it. I mean, Jesus on the cross was powerless. He let it go. In fact, that sense of weakness and powerlessness actually goes back to this doctrine we have called the incarnation, where God took on human form. And in taking on God's human form, if we turn to what Paul wrote in his letter to the Philippians, it meant a releasing, a relinquishing, a letting go, not grasping on to godness, onto power, but releasing it. Now, to catch the scandal of the cross in that day, I mean, think about how power was expressed. Power was expressed in military force. I mean, this was the Roman world, which was held together. We talk about this thing called the Peace of Rome, the Pax Romana, which was maintained by their military forces, the legions. But even beyond that, that's kind of political power, there is kind of religious power. And Corinth was a city in Greece. If you know anything about religions back in that time and age, the gods, well, sometimes came among the people. But where did the gods reside in Greece? Anybody know enough about Greek mythology? Where did the gods live?
Mount Olympus,
yes. Or what was it in the Roman culture kind of took over a lot of the Greek gods. What was the Roman equivalent? Daniel, do you remember? You don't remember. But, I mean, you know, it's a far away, a high place, a distant place, where that's where power was. And power was also multiple. Now, of course, in the Hebrew understanding of God, you know, that sense of splitting God up into little pieces, you know, different gods, that was, you know, not part of the picture. But even within Hebrew understandings, Jewish understandings, you know, this concept of a self-giving a God who would relinquish power, that the Messiah would be a self-giving, you know, where power, real power, was found in weakness. That was a scandal. And that's what really Jesus, I mean, what Paul is saying here when he's talking, you know, about this. He was saying that, it's kind of plain and simple, but when it comes right down to it, it's not all that plain and simple, but it is. It's wisdom. It's hard to understand. It is a mystery. It is hard to understand, and yet it's so very simple. You know, we're talking about Christ and Him crucified, Him lynched. Here is God, and we can try to cover that up with all our learning and all our books and everything else. We can try to obscure that truth. But the reality is, that, and if we were truly being honest with the gospel, this wouldn't be gold-plated, would it? It would be a rough-hewn piece of wood. Right? That's the scandal. That's the scandal of it. That is true wisdom, and it is hard to grasp. And yet, it is all about not grasping, but simply receiving. Power is found in weakness. Success, You know, there's all sorts of preachers out there preaching success from the Christian perspective. But I often wonder, have they read the gospel? The gospel isn't about going out and being the most successful person in the eyes of the world. The gospel isn't about whoever dies with the most wins. The gospel is about releasing, and that how true power is found in, well, how did Fanny Crosby call it in that hymn? Perfect what? Submission. Perfect submission. You know, there is a linkage, by the way, you know, when we talk about Egypt and our and we should call them our neighbors, our friends of a different religion. But that word submission is very big in Muslim circles. Submitting oneself to God, to as God as they perceive God to be. But we have that within our own. There is wisdom to be found in that. And that true power is found in weakness, that actually it is the fools of this world. Didn't Paul say that somewhere else in this letter? The fools in this world are the wise ones, the ones who think that they are not fools. Now, having said that, I want to say that is really something that is still brand new to us as we discover this. I mean, it's something that has to be discovered anew every single generation. This was a radical thought back in those days, and it still is. It is a fresh thought. It is like a breath of fresh air. Because we live our lives trying to hold on to what we've got. We live our lives trying to attain and grasp and pull. And the gospel is to let go. And to just live freely in the good news of God. To step into this Jesus Christ and Him crucified. It is deliberately plain and simple, but not simplistic. Not simplistic. I mean, yet the books are important. The gospel cannot easily be reduced. Now, I know that Jesus Christ and Him crucified sounds like what some call a tweet. I don't fully understand tweets. Anybody here understand tweets? But there's something where through your phone or whatever, people can follow you all over the place. And there's only so many characters that you can send out in a text message like that. Daniel, do you know how many? It's 140, and that's letters. So you can't send out too much. And part of the struggle in our current day and age is that we want a gospel that we can embrace in one fell swoop. You know, and you know, fully understand it. But that's not the gospel that we've got. The gospel that we've got can't be reduced to a soundbite, just like it cannot be hidden behind wisdom. It is fresh, and it comes into our lives like a breath of fresh air. Every morning, I mean, it's grounded in the sure and steady, unchangeable nature of God. But it's fresh and it's new every morning. This God of the Bible who is working through Jesus Christ, who, you know, that what Jesus did upon the cross is something that's still, you know, active in our world. Especially as we see, and one of the good things I saw this week, let me just end with this illustration. It was in Egypt. I don't know if any of you else caught this. But, you know, Muslims, they have regular times of prayer. You know, when they get down on their knees, you know, and they're praying, and, you know, it's a very physical thing. There were persons in Egypt who surrounded them during their times of prayer. Do you know who they were? Christians. Breath of fresh air. And it was in some ways continuing an act that started before when some Christians there in Egypt were attacking congregations, and there were Muslims who stepped in and did the same thing for them. That's a breath of fresh air, isn't it? That's some good news. Now, if only some others could see that, like the president of Egypt, but even the president of our country and others, and step into the gospel of Jesus Christ more fully.